Thank you very much. First of all, I want to acknowledge one of my great students, Cristina Contreras, which is working with me on this topic and helping me, trying to evaluate a series of pedotransfer functions for predicting the soil water content at field capacity and wilting points. Most of you know that many models use those two parameters. For instance, when you need to calculate an irrigation system, and you need to design an irrigation system, you need to calculate the water retention capacity or water holding capacity. And because this, you can measure these two values at the laboratory, but most of that is time-consuming and also costly for most applications. So an option is the use of indirect methods for those two variables based on more easily measured and more readily available soil data. Among the options that you have, one of them is the pedotransfer functions, which has been developed in order to characterize those two properties based on particle size distribution, bulk density, and organic matter, among many other soil properties. These pedotransfer functions, or PDFs, have been implemented in many environmental, hydrological, and land surface models, such as the Water Erosion Prediction Project, SWAT, OPUS, and EPIC. And based on the soil texture and organic matter content, this software calculates those two parameters, and based on that, estimate the infiltration, the water retention, and other properties in the soil. But you know that a model is as good as the data that you use to build it. So one of the questions that still remain is how those models or those PDF work in a different environment. I mean, in a soil that it was not used to calibrate it. So in the case of Chile, in South America, a considerable effort has been put into the description of textural and chemical properties of Chilean soils, but the applicability of the existing PDF has not been systematically addressed so far. So the objective of this study was very simple. It was to evaluate a series of PDF for predicting the soil water content at field capacity and wilting point using an independent data set. In that sense, it has two main purposes. One is provide some information to the Chilean users about the quality of these models when predicting with them, but also in terms of the international community, see how good this set of equations worked in a different environment with different soil series. In terms of soil database, we built a database based on the Chile's Natural Resource Information Center, which collect and evaluate the equivalent to the American or the US soil survey data for the entire country, most of the country. And here you have a picture on the left where you see the large variety of soil orders that you can find in the study area. And here you have the sampling points that we use for this study. And on the right side of this slide, you will see the textural triangle where you see the distribution of these soils in the study area. In order to evaluate which ones, some of these PDF, we performed a literature review and we found and we selected 12 different PDFs. There's more than 12 already published, but these are the ones that we can use in Chile based on the data that we already have available. And for instance, the one developed by Gupta and Larson in 1979, it calculates the soil water content at -33 pressure head in kilopascal, 1500. It based on data collected in the eastern and central U.S. It comes from 45 samples and used sand, silt, clay, bulk density, organic matter, and has some limitation based on the data that it was used to calibrate it. In the same way, the one developed by Ratan Lal in 1979, it comes from soils from Nigeria, tropical soils, and used only clay. Rolls, which is the classical one that you can see in many models and hydrology books, it is a nationwide soil data set. It's a large number of soil samples. Depending on the pressure head that you are calculating, you use sand, clay, organic matter, and also we have another one from RAL, Aina and Pereswamy, from tropical soils, Vandenberger, from Tropical Soils 2 and the one from Rawls published in 2004, which used sand, clay, and organic carbon. So we can group this PDF in two big groups. The first one are linear functions, which has an equation like this one, where you have coefficients A, B, C, D, E, and F, and also you use sand, silt, clay, organic matter, alpha density, depending on the equation that you are using. And the other one are nonlinear functions, where you can predict in the Vandenberg equation based on a combination between clay and bulk density, silt and bulk density. And the one that is more complex is the one developed by Rawls in 2004, where you have an equation like this one, which is a combination of organic carbon, clay, and sand. These are the results that we got when we use those equations for predicting the soil water content with the Chilean database. Here you have a selection of the equation, Gupton-Larson, Lal, Rawls, Aina and Pereswamy, and Rawls again. Here you have the measured water content, and here you have the predicted water retention, and at the two pressure heads, 33 and 15 hundredths with the brown X. And you see that, for instance, when you use Lal, you are underestimating the values. This is the one that it was measured. This is the one that it was predicted with the model. When you are using Aina and Pereswamy, you are overestimating the values at field capacity, and you are underestimating the values at wilting point. And the difference is not small. You can see that here is a change, for instance, from 0.1 to 0.2 or 0.3, depending on the point where you are evaluating this PDF. So the first, this is the first thing that we did. Then we took, before that, let me tell you what is the result of those equations in terms of the R-square that we were getting. These are the same PDFs. These are the original coefficients that we used from the original publications. This is the number of samples, the number of samples that we use in the case of Chile. This is the R-square published in the original documentation, and this is the one that we are getting when we use it for the Chilean soils. In some of them, we have no the R-square from the original publication, but you can see that most of the values go from 0.9 to 0.53, 0.9, 0.50, 0.47, 0.4. As expected, most of them reduce in terms of prediction. So the next step that we follow in this study is that we calibrate those equations based on our data set. So we were not separating in a calibration and validation set. We took all the soil samples in just one big group, like the one that it was following the same approach that Walter Rawls used in those equations from 1982. These are the results after the calibration. In yellow, or orange in this case, you see the values after the calibration, and the one in brown are before the calibration. And here you have a selection of the PDFs. These are the Gupta, Lal, Rawls, and Rawls, and these are the equation for field capacity, and here are the equation for wilting point. And you see here, for instance, in this one, it's pretty clear what was the effect of calibration. You move this group of data points to something very close to the one-to-one line that is the diagonal in this graph. Also, you see a big change in this one. Others, some of the other one didn't show a big change in the results. So this is the summary table for the analysis for the selected PDFs. Again, you have all the PDF here, the reported value for R-square, the value before calibration, and after the calibration. And you can see that some of them were, with some of them, we were not able to get a change or an increment in the R-square, but with other ones, we go from 53 to 69, 50, 66, and 0.13 to 0.66 in this case. And here is the root mean square error. We are our values are in fraction, so you mean that you know that in this case this is 10% in water content. It reduced to 0.06 as an error from 7 to 5, 19 to 10. Almost half of the value was predicted or was estimated when using it after calibration. That's the thing that we sent in our abstract for this conference. But in the meantime, we have been still advancing on this thing. Christina has been working more on this data, and now we are working with artificial neural networks. So I just want to show you some preliminary results that we have found so far in this and the next slide. And it's a topic that concentrates our interest at this time. We are using the artificial neural networks because they are a common tool for modeling complex input-output dependencies, which is a typical one, that the typical that we have here in this study. And when the number of inputs is larger than 3, usually these networks do better than regression techniques, which is the one that it was used for building all the other PDFs that I have shown you so far. But there is a difference. In this case, instead of using texture, organic matter, organic content, and bulk density, we are using the same thing, texture, bulk density, organic matter, content, but CEC also as a variable for those networks. And these are the results that we are getting so far when using artificial neural networks for predicting the soil water contents. The R-square for the entire data set is close to 0.8, which is higher than that we were getting with the first, with the best equation that we were able to calibrate before, that it was in average 0.6. Without calibration, the average it was around 0.4. So now we are getting 0.8 for the entire data set when you use it to predict the soil water content at field capacity, and 0.69 when you use it for a permanent wilting point. For the training set that we use to calibrate these neural networks, we were getting 0.81, and the validation data set 0.75, and for the wilting point 0.69, and 0.7 after that. And we are still working on this thing. One of the interesting things about this issue is that the neural network provide a big regression between many variables, but some of them can lose the physical meaning. So we are working now trying to clean that thing, following our approach to evaluate the significance of the factors. So in conclusion, this study evaluated a series of points, Pareto transfer function for predicting the soil water content, field capacity, and wilting point using an independent data set. Nothing from this data set was related to the original equations. There was a significant difference between the water content estimates obtained before and after the calibration. And like in previous studies, this result showed a significant relationship between soil water retention properties and parameters such as the soil texture, organic matter, content, and bulk density. However, and one important thing here to keep in mind that is that this study also demonstrates that despite their potential usefulness, the performance of the PDS still depends on the data set used for their development. And I want to acknowledge the support of the National Commission for Scientific and Technological Research, who provide the funding for this study. Thank you very much.
Okay, since our next presentation is canceled, we have time for questions for Carlos and also for Shmulik and other previous speakers. We have about 9 minutes or 10 minutes.
Yes. So my question has to do with the application of this transfer function method in the use in land surface model. In the land surface model, the scales are so large. So how do you incorporate this kind of information into those models?
Not yet. That's a pretty good question. It's a limitation that they have. So if we would have any chance to include the variability, the spatial variability of that, it would be maybe a chance to include an additional term in the equation, like an error function associated at the end. That would be a pretty good idea, but we have not done it so far.
How can you use this in the land surface model?
It's not easy, especially because if you want to get that spatial variability, you also would have, you should have some information about the variability of the soil properties, and you can get a different water content based of different soil. But that means also going again to a field and sampling again with a big in a small grid on the field. At least that you have some information about the variability of the property by itself. I don't know if that answered in some ways your question. No, that's quite good. Any other question or idea?
So, a question. What's going to be the difference between like your neural network model and like what we have in Rosetta? Like so it's included in Hydras, I guess.
Yeah.
Not Hydras, in Red Sea. So, yeah. It asks for sand, silt, clay, and organic matter, and bulk density, I guess, and give you the hydraulic parameters. So what's going to be the main difference between your model and that one?
Yeah, that's interesting, because when you're modeling something, you have to begin with some idea about what is happening. So the model is always affected by the modeler. So when you build something like Rosetta or any other model based on a regression, you have to decide in some way how these variables are connected. When you run a neural network like this one, you remove that chance, that process, and the model by itself look for the best combination among all the processes, and also feed the model several times with the same variable. That is something different in some way, because of that's the neural network process. So at the end, you will have something very similar, maybe a big equation in both cases, but the way that the numbers are generated for the neural networks is much more complex and probably will be much robust than the one that from Rosetta. But everything depends, because if I have to calculate this by hand,
well,
I prefer still the equation from Rawls.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Rosetta is also a neural network mm-hmm. model, so it's based on neural network.
Okay.
So
I was not.
That's why I'm asking you, like, because you are going to develop a neural network model for, like, for the transfer functions, and this is already existed. So, yeah. Do you think it's going to be like any better model than the Rosetta?
Okay. I didn't know that Rosetta was built with a neural network. I thought that it was built with regression techniques. Okay, it will be as different as the Rawls equation published in the first paper and the Rawls equation fitted for our data, because the neural network will have the parameters according to the data that you use when building, probably the one from Walter Rawls from Riverside, and the one that we are building, it will be basically based on a soil that are rich in organic matter contents mm-hmm. and has a different maybe structure or other properties. So probably the equation could look similar, but the constants will be changed.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Question for Shemulek. Well, anyways, because you didn't have time to get questions, so. I have a question for you, Shemulek. So you're modeling drip irrigation with many analytical solutions, and based on that you get hydraulic parameters, specifically the Gardner parameters for the alpha and KS, with the Gardner parameters. And my question is, if you have like change in soil structure after, like, I don't know, are you using this for like plants or trees? And if like in the growing season, the hydraulic properties will be changed, are you able to like readjust the model parameter? What's your comment?
I forgot to say in the lecture, but we did it just at the end of the season. We cut the stem of the plant to stop fluctuation, and we put the plastic mulch to stop the evaporation, which means that the determined the philosophy is